It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. Earlier this year, City Councilwoman Deb Gross introduced a bill to create the Pittsburgh Land Bank, which would be responsible for turning the city's vacant and tax-delinquent land over to developers, community development corporations, or private citizens for productive use. Corey O'Connor is one of the council members who likes the idea, but other council members, such as Ricky Burgess, have called the plan carpetbagging and say it is a thinly veiled attempt to hand land over to wealthy developers. I'm joined now in studio by council members Deb Gross and Corey O'Connor for a discussion of the issue of a proposed Pittsburgh land bank. Welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thanks for having us.
Hi, thanks. Thank you for having us.
You can join the conversation by calling 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Our email address is ESSPGH at WESA.FM. And you can reach us on Twitter at ESSPGH and follow the conversation at hashtag EPLive. How do you feel about the idea of a Pittsburgh land bank? 412-246-2002, the number to call. Deb Gross, let's begin with you. First of all, explain what a land bank is and how it works.
Great question. There are over 100 of these now around the country, and they arise out of a need to process land that cities were never set up to process. This land used to all be in private hands. This was somebody's house or somebody's yard or somebody's home. And over the decades of population movement, these lands have all been abandoned. They're vacant properties or they're empty homes because we know that we've lost more than half our population. So when we set up our city and its capacities nearly 100 years ago, this was never part of the job. This land was all occupied. In fact, we were over-occupied. And, less than 100 years ago, blight was overcrowding.
Right. There were so many people here working in the mills, coming here to take jobs, that there wasn't enough housing for all of them.
We were crowded in, elbow to elbow, shoulder to shoulder. And now we have the opposite problem. And we have not addressed our capacity inside of city government in order to do this job very well. So it is helpful to have an entity, a new agency, a new nonprofit corporation that can just do this full time, because we just haven't been doing it at nearly the scale that it needs to be done. And so we're allowed to do that now because the state of Pennsylvania passed legislation in October of 2012 to allow Pittsburgh city government to allow one of these agencies to exist within our boundaries.
As far as you're concerned, and I would throw this out either to you, Deb, or to you, Corey O'Connor, has the city of Pittsburgh, as it has been accused of doing, intentionally neglected certain communities?
No. No, that statement's false. I mean, we as the city operate as well as we can. I mean, we're obviously restricted in funding that we have to maintain these properties, and I think that's really the fight that we're going to take back on all the blight in the community by having a land bank that can then function and hire individuals from said community to clean up or repair that property. So it's really more of a community-driven process than anything else.
And have you looked at places where land banks exist in other cities, such as Ohio, Michigan, New York? And if so, what have you learned from those experiences?
It's important to have a community-driven process. I mean, this is really fundamentally important to people where they live. It'd be important to you where you live. It's important to me where I live, right? That we know what's coming in our neighborhoods. And so it is incumbent upon the land bank and will be on the Pittsburgh land bank to address community vision and community needs. And those are not the same on in every city neighborhood or on every city block. So it's really going to be an engagement process, where the land bank and its staff and its board will have to be from the neighborhoods, will have to engage with the neighborhoods and be in listening mode to see what's needed where, and then to be a partner to those people who are on the ground. It's almost like an entirely new challenge, right? We've lost half of our city population, and so it's a new question. What do we want here across the street from you or across the street from me or next door to me? And so it's a really big job. And this is the first step, I think, in having those conversations.
412-246-2002 is the number to call if you would like to join this conversation about the idea of creating a Pittsburgh land bank with City Councilwoman Deb Gross, City Councilman Corey O'Connor. Let's go to John in Shaler. John, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hello. I wanted to say thank you for the council people's service to the city. And I appreciate everything that especially O'Connor family has done for the city. And I wanted to say that I think the land bank is a good idea, and I think we need to involve people that are actually actively buying real estate in the Allegheny County area. They've reached out to some real estate groups that are private individuals, not big corporations. And I think this is a good approach that the city has started. How can we parlay this effort into actually getting higher priced properties put into the city so that we can get a better tax base?
Well,
I think that's a great point, and thanks for the family compliment. I'll let them know that. And I think that's the whole process, is it's not just city-owned property, but there are other properties out there that could be banked for future development. And I think that's where we talk to real estate officials and we talk to people that have planning backgrounds. And I think that's really where you'll see the amendments and the community coming out forward for this, is because there's been so much community involvement and talking to experts on this subject, because it is a difficult subject for just council members to do. And that's why we've reached out to as many people as possible from real estate to learn the ins and outs of a transaction that we do in the city, but the land bank can do better. And I think that's really where the caller makes a good point, is to open this up to the community's involvement and their plans, but then also to developers that want to get involved with the city, because we are growing and we want more people to stay here, and how we can make that connection.
Now, I mentioned Councilman Ricky Burgess, who along with Councilor Daniel Lavelle represents neighborhoods with a large share of blighted and vacant properties. The concern among these particular councilors is that this is merely a ploy to hand land over to wealthy developers. I know this is not the first time that you have heard this, but what about their concerns that this would become a front for those who want to cherry pick the land from low and moderate income communities?
And that's false. And here's the reason being, is right now the board that we have comprised of is we want three from the mayor's office, three from council, and three from the community. And those are all three. Each one has appointees that are going to come from the community with background in community organization, planning, or in financial real estate. And I think that's the importance, because it's going to the community. And all the property that they're basically saying that's just going to be handed over to the land bank from the city is false. Every property, every parcel that's sold from the city to the land bank must go through city council. So I, as the elected official, know there's prime property in my district, and my community group or my neighbors really want that for a side lot, or they want it for a park. Well, I, as the council representative, can talk to my colleagues, and that property does not have to be sold to the land bank from the city. So we have some oversight in that process.
But there appears to be a sticking point here, and that is whether the decisions of this board that would govern the entity would require council approval. Your bill, Deb, as it presently is worded, would allow the land bank board to act without council approval. So shouldn't the council have more oversight here?
Well, let's be clear also. The minute we pass this legislation and the land bank exists, it has zero pieces of property. And if all of these parcels in any of our council districts are city-owned, the land bank doesn't have to ever have them. So the land does have to first go through city council in order to get to the land bank.
And here's why this
is – so that is council participation.
And here's why there's even more participation is, first of all, the city-owned property that has to go in. And then the community, the neighbors – have to have a say in this as well, because we have a structured process where signatures from adjacent properties can stop the sale of set property. And then there's also in the amendments coming out would be when the policies and procedures, and that's where a lot of the detail is going to come from once the land bank board is formed, those policies and procedures have to hold at least five citywide meetings to talk to residents about their concerns of how the land bank would operate. And those policies and procedures, again, have to be approved by city council. So we have a long road ahead before this is actually up and running. And, you know, when we talk amongst ourselves, we don't think the first parcel will be available for about a year and a half, at least, through this long community process that we want to have, because we want to hear from the community. This is going to be their property, and we want to make sure that the benefits in the community are given back to them.
So to clarify, what you, Deb Gross, and Corey O'Connor, are saying is that the Land Bank Board cannot act without city council approval.
No.
It doesn't have anything to act with.
What about
once they acquire the land?
So once they would acquire the land, in the amendments forthcoming, first they have to consult with the council member if there is a plan or if there are neighborhood priorities, because not every community has a plan. So the council member is involved in the planning of that particular parcel. And then from there, if the neighborhood – what the land bank has to do is post a sign that this property is going to be sold, just like we do with planning and zoning. And if there is a neighborhood objection to that, which is a signator objector, then that land bank will now have to hold a public hearing in that neighborhood to discuss that parcel of land. So we are putting more emphasis on the community and the neighbors, and we as council members can do that all the way through. That's our right. We just don't have a vote at the end of the day. So if
that's the concern, though.
But here's the other concern is, what do you do with private property? We don't have that concern right now. And, you know, the land bank just doesn't get this property and then all of a sudden builds a gas station. There's also planning and zoning and a number of objective ways that not only the residents but us as council members can object to. And there's also a provision in there where, you know, we're between 3 or 5 years, if we see that the land bank is not operating properly, we as council can elect to get rid of it. So we have a lot of oversight, and not to mention the fact that city property goes into the land bank, that's on us first. That's on city council. So we can say which parcels we want in or out.
And Paul, I think it's also important to hear what the community members themselves have been interested in seeing and how a land bank would operate here in the city. We've been having these conversations for 2 months. You can see them online. We've sat through hours of hearings, had hours of community meetings throughout the city and within city council, and emails and conversations on this for 2 months straight. And what the community members of the city of Pittsburgh want to see is not 9 people arbitrarily deciding what goes on in their neighborhoods. What they want to see, what they want to do is participate. And so those are the amendments that we've built in. Even greater participation in the governance, and those are the changes that you'll see in the board structure so that there is direct community representation on the board of directors. Over and above transparency of the original legislation, which is a vast improvement over the current system. Our current system does not have transparency.
Well, and that's one of the questions that's come up, because other council members and residents have questioned why the city couldn't revamp its existing real estate division to produce better results. You're saying that there's...
But I would like to emphasize that the community has also been demanding a way to have public participation, which we also do not have in our current system. So a treasurer's sale goes through and the public doesn't have a chance to know that it's coming, to know what's being proposed for that piece of land, and then to also have a recourse. And here they're able to, as the councilman said, have a public petitioning process where they can demand a public hearing on what's going to go in across the street from them or next door or down the street, and be able to convene neighbors together to have that conversation. That is not happening now.
It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. We're talking with City Council members Deb Gross and Corey O'Connor about the issue of a proposed Pittsburgh land bank. A lot of people who want to weigh in. Let's go to Dan in North Oakland, 412-246-2002. Dan, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you. I just wanted to say first that it's all five of the council members who have the five largest percentages of eligible properties who are concerned about this. I don't think any of them are against the land bank concept so much as they are worried about how things will play out. And this has to do with a long history of not this mayor or anything, that mayors, we have traditionally had private developers put together proposals behind closed doors. They get presented from the mayor to the council as a fait accompli. Council ends up acquiescing, and we get the lower hill removed in the 60s, doesn't actually get redeveloped until the 90s. We have East Liberty being played with by a bunch of redeveloper interests that ends up killing local businesses and creating Home Depots and Targets and things like that. All of the hardware stores within the 2.5 mile radius of Home Depot disappeared in 10 years after it was built. So there is that underlying concern that the Urban Redevelopment Authority has run amok in partnership with some well-connected developers.
These are good points, Dan. And let's let either Deb Gross or Corey O'Connor or both of them respond to your concerns. Go ahead, Corey.
I mean, I would say that, again, this is a community-driven process, which is now there are no behind-closed-doors meetings. And why this process is like this, and the most successful land bank has been, I believe, in Flint, Michigan, and it's because council has oversight at the beginning and not at the end. And when you talk about backdoor deals or behind-closed-door deals, there's one council member right now in Philly that's stopping all the development in his neighborhood. And the issue with that is he doesn't get to meet with these developers. And, that's not what we're proposing. We're proposing that the council member is involved in this process, but we're also proposing that he or she goes hand in hand with the community support. And I think that strengthens the neighborhood and it strengthens the council person's perspective on what's going on.
I agree. I mean, I think the concerns are valid. This is a legacy that we live with daily in Pittsburgh. And this legislation, along with the open data legislation that was also proposed at the beginning of the council session and has been approved, I think are steps in the right direction to daylighting these operations, both what's already happening in City Hall right now. You don't see a list of properties that the city owns up on the city's website. It just isn't there.
So you're saying that there is this inherent problem of a lack of
transparency. And that I think this legislation enables and empowers community participation in part because it increases transparency.
Well, we have lots of folks who want to get in on the conversation. We do need to get to a break. When we come back, we'll take your calls and your comments about the idea of a Pittsburgh land bank. We're talking with Pittsburgh City Councilwoman Deb Gross and Pittsburgh City Councilman Corey O'Connor. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. This is Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about a proposed Pittsburgh land bank with Pittsburgh City Councilors Deb Gross and Corey O'Connor. Anxious to take your calls at 412-246-2002. Let's go to Marimba in the Hill District. Marimba, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Marimba, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm well, thank you. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Hi, my name is Marimba Malayans. I'm calling from the Hill Community Development Corporation. Hi, Councilwoman Gross.
Hello,
and Councilman O'Connor.
Ms. Malayans.
Hey, how are you?
And Paul.
Hi.
So I'm calling because I have some concerns about the land bank, and I think that the discussion and process has lacked the depth and genuine desire to collaborate that's necessary for communities to fully buy in. When I say communities, I mean those most impacted. So what we have right now is a city council that is divided, And this is happening mostly around race and class, racial and class lines. And that causes me great consternation relative to pushing this forward so quickly. So my question is one around the urgency. You know, why was this bill introduced the second week of City Council, being in session on January 14th? And what is the urgency around pushing forward a bill that's going to impact every single city neighborhood without really doing that deep dive? Also, I'd like to say that Councilman O'Connor talked a little bit about the city-owned properties and those not being able to be moved over without first having City Council approval, but the reality is that these neighborhoods that are most impacted have a high level of tax delinquent properties, which are privately owned, and those properties could be moved over much more quickly. That's a major concern. And so I'd really like to ask Councilwoman Gross also, are we repeating history? Are we missing our opportunity to change the direction that our legacy has, you know, put us in? And so I think that we're missing an opportunity to have a deeper dive conversation. Land banks in other cities were most impactful because those cities were hit very hard by the mortgage crisis, which Pittsburgh did not experience that same level of crises, I'll say. So I'd like to just ask the counselors to slow this process down, to engage in a deeper conversation with the communities that are mostly impacted, and I'd like to get some, you know, responses.
Okay, Marimba, you are certainly expressing a concern that the process here is being rushed. So let's start there, and Deb Gross, why don't you address that concern?
Absolutely. It's not uncommon for legislation to be introduced and then held. We've seen many, many pieces of legislation. When it's a big, complex issue, you raise the subject, and then you have community conversation. And that has been ongoing now for 2 months. It has been daily for Councilman O'Connor and I hearing with constituents face-to-face about this issue. And in addition, as city council people, we have sat side-by-side with all of council for hours in public hearings multiple times. And honestly, 2 months into it, we're not hearing any new or different concerns. I feel that we've had a very full conversation. I think we've had 30 or 40 meetings in communities around this issue going and with a really deep, intelligent conversation with people who know this legislation line by line and know what they would like to see changed. And we've incorporated those changes in these amendments. And they are the topics that we talked about.
But you can
governance, transparency, right. Public engagement, accountability. And that's what is an improvement above and beyond the procedures that we have right now.
But you can understand the historical concerns. And Marimba did a really good job of putting all of those concerns in perspective. There is a history in this city of the desires of areas like the Hill District not necessarily be taking into concern when it's time to redevelop. When the opportunity to put the Civic Arena in Uptown came up, people there were not necessarily, if they were consulted, certainly their concerns went by the wayside as that building went up. And now, as that land is open and there still isn't a firm plan in place for that, as well as other neighborhoods of the city, people are saying, whoa, slow down. We want to have our say. Corey O'Connor?
And Marimba, I mean, we met last week with her, so we had a very good conversation about her concerns and people that she's talked to as well. And she brought up the point with private property. And I think there are powers, or I know that there are powers that the land bank specifically has that a city cannot have. And there's one important piece is, let's say you are a homeowner, and this is a gentleman in Oakland told us about this the other day, is they can't afford to pay their gas and electric bill, and they are in a row house. So their solution is to build their own fire each and every day because they have so many tax delinquent and back taxes. Now, here's what the benefit of a land bank is they can have a hardship payment plan where they can work with individuals and help them remove their liens from their properties and remain in their homes. This is the life estate part of the bill.
Well, why couldn't they have that without a land bank?
Because the city doesn't have that power. We do that somewhat through Jordan Tax, but we still would then come in and seize the property. And this is where we can actually have the owner remain in their home. And I think those are some of the benefits that a land bank has that a lot of people aren't discussing. And then another portion
would a land bank be able to take owner-occupied land?
Yes. I mean, obviously, they have to show hardship and, you know, like you said, when there are vacant and abandoned and blighted areas and you have slum landlords that are $30,000 in back taxes, and we have those throughout the city, and they live in Colorado or California and they don't care about Pittsburgh, that's where a land bank can also come in and benefit us.
But I would like to emphasize that Marimba and I, we had this conversation last week, that this is not Las Vegas. This is not Orlando. This is not a place where people have moved in, bought a McMansion, and abandoned it 2 years later. When we're talking about tax-delinquent, owner-occupied property in Pittsburgh, we're talking about community members that we value. We're talking about the heart of the community. We have seniors in our neighborhoods. They don't leave and retire to Florida. Many of our neighborhoods rely on these key community members. They are the backbones of the community. They might be a year tax delinquent. That is not the mission of this land bank, to remove our valued seniors from their homes. In fact, we have thousands and thousands of empty, clearly abandoned properties that would take us 60 years to process out into new hands in our current processes. There's lots of work for the Pittsburgh Land Bank to do in its first 10 years. And we're hoping that it will, as Councilman O'Connor say, add as an additional helping hand, a layer of protection to the seniors, especially who are trying to keep their homes.
I want to go to a tweet from David who says, community must trust that they will see public benefit through new private investments. Also, we have a letter from Audrey who says that the Pittsburgh Land Bank issue has become totally out of control, and it seems to me that all councilors should look at it anew. We elect these folks to represent us. They should not be accusing each other of representing only a portion of their district. Having served in council as a staffer, I have to say that the best legislation was crafted when staff persons from as many offices as possible sat down together to write it, and when representatives from all sides of a matter were brought in to discuss the issues. And that is a letter that we received from a listener anticipating our discussion of this topic. And again, her name is Audrey. Let's go to the phones. We have John in Friendship with a question. John, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
I wanted to follow up on what Marimba was saying indirectly, and that is the timing of this. I actually think the timing of this is perfect in that there is a lot of attention being focused on Pittsburgh. It's not just the president, Obama, who likes Pittsburgh, but real estate developers is in Boston and all sorts of city are looking at Pittsburgh as the next Austin. So I think the timing's great. However, with that said, would it be possible to attach a residency requirement for people that are purchasing so we don't get absentee landlords that may be living in Fox Chapel or, you know, even further away and not really care about the property in that community?
That's
a good
concept,
point. Yeah, I mean, we would have to, again, look at the state legislation and what we are allowed to do based on that ordinance. But I think you mentioned it is how the city is starting to boom right now and how we are the next wave of, you know, the great American cities that are reviving themselves. And when you look at something like the city owns 5,000 plus parcels and we're not taking care of them, and a lot are next to residents that just want to get that land and clean it up. A land bank does that a lot quicker, and they have to maintain it. This isn't just the city where, you know, we don't cite ourselves. If a land bank owns that property, they can be cited just like every other person that owns property. And the benefit to cleaning up a house next to you or next to your neighbor is that that quality of life, one, is better, and then that the property value will go up, and it entices more people to live in that community.
Let's go to Bill in Carrick. Bill, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh. Thanks for waiting.
Yeah, hi, Paul.
Hello. Go ahead with your comment or question.
Yeah, hello, council members. I guess I oppose this legislation. They're spending a lot of time today talking about step one, which is assigning the ownership from the city after property is declared blighted and giving it to the land bank. But step two's got some problems, too. Step two is where the land bank staff can give the property or lease it, sell it to whoever they like without any oversight. and they can do this for up to 5 years, and they can keep land off the tax roll. So this is really an indirect tax increase. But I guess what really disturbs me about it is the course of nature of it. I understand we have a lot of blank vacant properties in the city, but the better solution would be to do what was done in the day of Mr. O'Connor's father, which was to tax the land at a higher rate than you tax the buildings. That way people with vacant land have a financial penalty against them. They're more likely to sell it or give it up at a tax sale. And we have a treasure sale process under state law that the city is allowed to use, and that's the proper way to do all this in the open.
Well,
I would say that, unfortunately, we have allowed this problem to get to a scale where our treasurer system is not going to even – isn't making a dent in it. And so that's why we need like a whole new tool that will work on this day in and day out. I can say also that if this really isn't – and it's unfortunate that these are traditionally called land banks because – I think we're at the part what Councilman O'Connor just said was we're essentially already squatting on them. The city has taken possession, and we're not doing anything with them. And it's
so the
really
city
difficult.
Takes possession, and the property remains blighted.
Yes, we're only getting a couple of hundred out through our treasurer sale system each year, and I think there's actually pent up demand in the neighborhoods to get control back over these properties. Some of them for decades have not paid any taxes. And imagine having to look at the pile of rubble yourself across the street and not being able to yank that property away from the city. That's what we hear, stories of people saying, I tried, I filed the papers, I followed up, I kept at it for a year, and I finally gave up getting title to that parcel next door to me or across the street. And we need to do better than that. That's just unacceptable.
412-246-2002. Let's go to David in Dormont, and then we'll go to Lucille in Homewood. David, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, thank you for this discussion. I was just wondering what the counselors thought of the difference between land banks and land trusts, and what role a land trust could have in helping community members to be more of a part of the process.
David asking, what is the difference between land banks and land trusts?
I love land trusts. I actually volunteered for one back in my 20s and in North Carolina for a short while. And that one, the Durham Land Trust, was intentionally created in the 1980s to keep housing affordable in a particular bounded neighborhood in central Durham near the Duke University campus, where there was some gentrification pressure around its edges. And it's still in business 30 years later, and it's doing a good job. So the way it functioned was to hold the land and basically, almost like they do in London, lease the house for a 100-year lease so that your house is more affordable, so that you're just basically – you have – it's not exactly a permanent – ownership because the land trust owns land, but it allows people to have much more affordable housing and to keep that community integrity so that they can stay in their neighborhoods. So it's almost subsidizing the value of their homes in a way by having an equity share in the property, which is different than what we're talking about here. So again, as I just said to the last call, it's unfortunate that it's called a bank because really we're talking about almost recycling it and getting it back out again. We've already effectively banked the land, and enough already. We're not letting it out. It's like the banks who aren't lending. We haven't let go of these properties, and it's time to process them out. But there are a bunch of good steps, legal steps that need to be done to protect any owners that we don't know where they are and to process them out. So this land bank entity can help do that quicker and get it back into community control.
Let's take one last call from Lucille in Homewood. Lucille, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Hi, good afternoon. Thank you. Good afternoon, Councilwoman Gross and Councilman O'Connor.
Hello.
I have been involved in this land banking with the council people for a little while now. And the saddest thing to me is that the people who own that property, the majority of them, they've been allowed to just have that property sit in our communities and become blighted and abandoned and have not been held responsible. And they're just getting away scot-free. And, you know, that has caused a considerable amount of damage to the people in our communities in terms of the rate of crime, the loss of life, the loss of dignity and respect, and created an environment of hopelessness and helplessness for generations. And no one seems to want to address that part of this land banking issue. And it seems that one of the so-called rewards that we could possibly get out of this whole land bank is an amendment to the legislation that says that we, as residents of the community, will have first choice and or first pick at being the ones to maintain the properties, so that when people decide to buy the properties, they'll be up to par and looking real nice. You know, and to me, that's such a slave mentality, because the people in our communities, especially in Homewood, we can do way more than maintain properties. And I think one of the things that needs to be considered is possibly putting a land bank office in the communities that will be most affected, and creating some job opportunities for the residents that live in those communities. So when the new homes are built or the homes are rehabbed, at least they'll be able to purchase one of the homes and become a homeowner and get that home on the tax rolls and also get themselves on the tax rolls. Thank you.
Thank you, Lucille. And what
yeah,
about
I would just say that's a great point, is we want this to be an economic generator as well. In the meetings that we've had with community groups, one over in Beltsover, they mentioned that they have started a youth program where kids get paid for cleaning up a side lot. And now the land bank owning the property has to maintain it. And we put in provisions where they have to work with that community to hire people to clean those lots. So now all of a sudden you're creating jobs within the community, you're cleaning up a vacant and abandoned property, and now everybody wins. And I think that's the benefit that we're trying to have with this land bank.
We've been talking with City Council members Deb Gross and Corey O'Connor on the issue of a proposed Pittsburgh land bank. I'm sure this conversation will be ongoing for at least a while anyway. Thanks to you both for joining us here today.
Thank you. And thanks to the callers for another excellent page of suggestions.
Coming up, should college athletes be able to form a union? It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA.